Yes, it's Thursday, and that means it is time for romance. I'm your host, Cindy Deese, and welcome to Love in Uniform Radio. On this show, we talk with the hottest authors in the military romance genre and in uniform genre today. Today we're joined by USA Today bestselling author Heather Long, and I'm super excited to have her with us. Heather likes long walks in the park, science fiction, superheroes, Marines, and men who aren't douchebags. Amen, sister. Her books are filled with heroes and heroines tangled in romance as hot as Texas summertime. From paranormal historical westerns to contemporary military romance, Heather might switch genres, but one thing is true in all of her stories. Her characters drive the books. When she's not wrangling her menage of animals, she devotes her time to family and friends she considers family. She believes if you like your heroes so real you could lick the grit off their chest, and your heroines so likable you're sure you've been friends with women just like them, you'll enjoy her worlds as much as she does. And I can attest to that. Heather is a terrific writer. With that said, hi, Heather. How are you?
Hi. I was sitting over here laughing because I was dancing to the music.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. Oh. No, let's not do that. You just had neck surgery, so no dancing for you.
Just a little bit. I can move the rest of you. It just looks like a robot without the head moving.
Nice. So I happen to know that you scheduled part of your neck surgery around the premiere of the latest Star Wars movie. So I have to ask you, what did you think of it?
I freaking loved it, and I was so happy that I was actually able to go. I was so good with my recovery and coming home. When I got released from the hospital, it was funny. Even all the nurses and like my doctors all knew that, you know, I'm like, tell me exactly what it is I need to do, because I have 9 days and I need to not have any setbacks over the next 9 days because I do not want to miss my movie. And my husband kept shaking his head at me, but nope, I got to go. He carried in a pillow and a blanket for me, and I got to sit in a recliner chair, and I had on my cone of shame, which is what I called my neck brace, and all these people looking at me askance, and I'm like, shut up, it's Star Wars. And
oh, yeah.
It was awesome. It was so awesome to be in the theater on that day, and the biggest reason for me being in Star Wars on opening day, because this dates back to when I was a kid. When I was five,
yep,
that was the first movie I ever saw in a movie theater, and I saw it on opening weekend in North Hollywood. And I've seen every movie, every Star Wars film that's come out, from, you know, the prequels to Rogue One to The Force Awakens. God help me, I even remember the Christmas special they did back in the late 70s, early 80s. Let's not ever remember that one again, but I do remember it. But when you're in the theater on opening day, you get the energy of everybody who's laughing, cheering, clapping. It's so much more vivacious. It's so much more alive. And I got to enjoy all of that. So, yeah, there's all these people out there going, "Oh, The Last Jedi, it was not Star Wars." Yeah, shut up. It was great Star Wars. And I loved everything about it. I laughed. I cried. I kissed my 28 bucks goodbye and said, "Let's give me a please, honey. Can I have some more?"
Yeah, I was really impressed by that. As you say, you said you saw it in North Hollywood. Does that mean you're a Hollywood baby?
Actually, I was born in Florida, and I was raised in Texas, California, Tennessee, and England.
Good Lord.
Moved around a lot when I was a kid. And no, I wasn't a military baby. A lot of people think I was because we moved so much. But my parents were pretty quixotic. They were very gypsy oriented. They moved to different places mostly because they wanted to go see them. When we lived in North Hollywood, when I was from ages, I think, 3.5, 4 till I was 7. And my mom worked at the Sheraton Hotel in Universal City. So I actually got to meet a lot of the actors. I met David Prowse. I met Telly Savalas. I have an autograph book here with all these autographs from people like Eric Estrada. I mean, this is like, you know, the 70s glory days here. I have all these actors who signed placemats, and they all signed it. And my mom would get those autographs for me, and we should put them in this autograph book. But I actually remember seeing all these people because I would get to go up to that restaurant like once a week. I lived in California for quite a while, and then I think we moved to Texas because of my asthma when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, boring reason to move to Texas, but that's what actually got me into the Lone Star State.
Interesting. I don't know. When I moved to Texas, the first allergist I saw, they did allergy testing on me, and she walked in and she said, "Oh, sweetie, you're allergic to Texas." So yeah, apparently
totally
I reacted
possible.
To everything, but go ahead.
I always warn people about our mountain cedar.
Yeah. Yeah, people without even without allergies, yeah, react to it. It's vicious stuff. Yeah, crazy.
It really
did
is.
You
cedar
have a favorite place?
Do I have a favorite place from where I lived or where
I've
been?
Yeah, and just from your travels. I mean, I know you've traveled a lot. So do you have a favorite place that you like to go back to over and over?
England. Oh, actually, okay, let me be honest. Disney World, because I've been to Disney World probably a dozen times in my life.
Love
it. Trust me when I say it is the happiest place on earth. I've actually written books at Disney World. There is a particular scene in my series Fevered Hearts, in book two. There's a scene that I always, whenever someone asks me what's the craziest, you know, sex scene you've ever written in the craziest place. Well, I wrote the wagon wheel sex scene sitting next to Cinderella's castle.
Oh, goodness.
I was sitting in the smoking area. This is back when I was still smoking, and I was sitting in the smoking area, and my husband and my daughter were off, you know, my kiddo, where they were off doing something, and I was sitting in the smoking area, and I had my little tiny, it was this little tiny Dell, I can't even remember what they're called, but it was a little red laptop, basically, but it fit in my purse.
Yep.
So I had it open, and I sat there, and I wrote this whole scene right there. And I, to this day, every time I pass that spot when I'm at Disney World, I crack up.
Kind of giggle. I love it. Well, my daughter's godfather was a Disney exec, and so, yeah, we've gone there over and over and over the years. And so
I was married there.
Oh, I love it. My daughter is threatening to get married there. Yeah,
I will tell you that at some point I should have to tell your daughter the story of the surreality of being married at Disney World is that when you're standing there in your wedding dress and you're walking down because we were at the boardwalk and so I had to go down this long ramp to get on the carriage and everyone's like, oh, it's such a fairy tale wedding. There's fairy tale and then there's weird. I was walking down the swan thing, and of course, I'm in my floor length ball gown wedding dress thing, and I go walking down, and all these people are staring at me, and people started lining up and taking my picture, and all these little girls were running up and they were waving at me. So I started waving at them, and I started doing the little royal wave.
Oh, yes.
I get loaded up into the carriage with the footman, and it was just me and the drivers and stuff, and they start driving around, and people are pausing and pointing and taking pictures, and I'm continuing to wave. And in the back of my mind, there's like this little thing playing going on. What is happening here? Why did I say yes to this? What is happening here? They get all the way around, and then they pull the carriage off into this little shady spot. And the handler who was working with our wedding coordinator comes. He's got the guy wearing the headset and stuff. Comes up to the door and he says, "They're not quite ready for us, so we're gonna hold here for a minute." And I was really happy that it was in the shade because even though it was October, it's Florida, it was hot. And so I'm sitting there, and this guy says, "He says, so this is usually the time that we ask if you want to go through with this." And I sort of like this gal beating this up. And I turn around and I'm looking at this dude like, "Go through with what?" And he says, because if you don't want to, we can have you at a bar in 15 minutes. We'll pack up your things. We'll move you to a different hotel. And then we'll notify the group. And I'm just staring at this dude like, I'm sorry, what?
You are prepared for everything.
He did. So, yeah, so utterly prepared for it. I mean, we can have you at a bar. We'll get you all taken care of. We'll pack up your room. They would get me completely relocated. Then they would notify the group. And, of course, you know, once I get past the mouth agape shock, the writer brain kicks in, and I go, idle curiosity. How many brides actually go for this plan?
Yes.
1 in 5. He tells me 1 in 5.
No way. Oh, man, that's total book material.
This was nearly 20 years ago now, but still it was 1 in 5, and I'm stunned. And then I'm like, no, he's like, so then he asked me if I wanted, I'm like, no, I'm good. Trust me. I wouldn't have gotten this far if I wasn't good. I'm good. So I'm still mulling all of this in my brain as they then pull the carriage around and we get to the Rose Garden at the Yacht Club, which is a very pretty place. And that's where we get married in the gazebo, and we're going to get married in this gazebo. And they put the little step down, and I see all the people standing. I see Scott down there standing inside the gazebo, and he's got this, like, sort of cheesy grin on his face. And I'm all prepared. I've mentally prepared myself for this. And then this bugler does the announcing bugle thing that they do and all the, you know, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And I lost it. I started laughing, and I laughed all the way through that ceremony. I tried to get a grip. I tried to get a grip at one point, but nope, there was no having it, because the minister starts off, we're here today for this most solemn occasion, and I died laughing all over again. There's nothing solemn about this occasion. But that's my Disney World story.
Epic.
So, I would tell your daughter, she will get great stories out of it, but be prepared that it'll be a little weird.
That is absolutely one of the best wedding stories I have ever heard. Clearly, you need to write a set of books of the Disney Runaway Brides.
Yeah, see, I have to be careful with that, though, because Disney will come after you if you use their name.
Yeah, Disney, yeah, you got to watch that little mouse. He's got some serious lawyers, but yes.
Yeah, he does. A mouse has a little bit of a bite.
Yes, yes, he does. Oh, that's amazing. Oh, that makes my day. That just makes me happy. So, since we're on the Disney World theme, do you have a favorite thing at Disney World?
Space Mountain was always my absolute favorite, hands down. And I think it will probably remain my favorite, largely because, I mean, that's the ride I remember going on when I was teeny tiny, and I've gone on it every time, up until I started having the neck issues, and I'm not allowed to do those, although they're hoping once I heal from this last one, I get some of my roller coasters back, not all of them. And that's okay, too. I mean, I'll take the good with the bad on this one. But Space Mountain, absolutely adore it. And then we always end up having to do Splash Mountain now because that's what the kiddos' favorite was. But and Star Tours. And then, let's go back to the fact that I'm a absolute and total, Star Wars nerd. Star Tours, when they opened Star Tours, back in the 80s, the late 80s, my grandmother actually put me in the car, drove me all the way to Florida for one day to go on that ride. Because
what a great grandma.
We drove all. I know. She was Nan Rock. So she took me all the way there just so I could ride Star Tours. We didn't, I went on it like two or three times, and then we went and got food and we went home. And we were living in Dallas at that point. So, I mean, that's not a short drive.
No, it's a couple thousand miles. That's fantastic. So I assume you're going back when Star Wars Land opens?
Oh, here's the beauty of it. Star Wars Land is scheduled to open in 2019, which means right on my 20th anniversary. And my husband goes, thank you, Disney. 20th wedding anniversary nailed.
By the way, you probably want to start researching right now, getting the reservations for the Star Wars Hotel. They're expecting to fill up a year in advance or more. So,
we've already got it on our list.
For listeners out there that are interested.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
You really love it. Plan about anytime they have anything brand new opening at Disney World, like the Avatar stuff that just opened. You can expect that to be about 9 months ahead of time. All of the fast passes for the first week will be gone.
Isn't that crazy? Love it.
And you gotta plan at least a year to 13 months ahead of time to be able to really enjoy all of it. And my cousin who lives in England has a vacation house now in Florida, specifically because she too is a Disney and Harry Potter aficionado and loves Star Wars. And so that she doesn't ever have to worry about getting a hotel. She has a place she can, she can go and stay.
Love it. My kind of woman. So we probably ought to talk about books a little bit. What are you working on right now?
We can do that. I've got so much in my to-be-written list with the unexpected surgery in the fall followed by the surgery that was planned. I got a little behind, but I have a brand-new release out today. I'm writing in L. James's Brotherhood Protectors Kindle World. And for those who don't know what the Kindle Worlds are, they are, for lack of a better term, they're fan fiction for whatever author's world you're in. So you can, but you can keep your own characters, or you can cross over characters from one of your own series to it if you want. The rules are a little, it depends on the rules of the world. And then you write, novels or novellas, usually novellas, and you get to play. You get to basically go play in their sandbox. And for me, that's a lot of fun. Because, we all write, I write for a living and that's what I do full time. But at the same time, I write primarily because it's where I get my joy. So when I get to do these, it's a lot of fun for me. And L. James's Brotherhood Protectors A lot of them are, you've got SEALs. Most of them are retired. Some are still active duty, but they're the ones that are usually the main focus are kind of retired. And it's set in a place called Eagle Rock, Montana. So, you know,
cool.
Beautiful country up there.
Yep.
And they work as bodyguards. Usually
nice.
All word of mouth. They don't do any advertising. So it's definitely, you got some badasses going in to save the girl. And the girls are usually have minds of their own and are very, you know, sassy. So, and I love that, you know, there's always good humor in these books and there's some great action sequences. In fact, when she invited me to do this, it was right before I was having the surgeries. And so I was like, yeah, I'd love to, but I hadn't gotten a chance to get caught up. So she sent me all the books. And so like the week after my surgery, I was just devouring them. And I came up with an idea almost immediately and I was able to write faster than I thought I was going to be able to. So I worked on this novella. And so that novella came out today. It's called Chasing Katie. And, it starts in New York City, goes to Montana, ends up in New York City. And I had a lot of fun with that story. And so, yeah, he's a Navy SEAL and, you know, SEALs are hot.
Yes, they
and,
are.
And I freely admit I'm a little predisposed towards Marines. Marines are what I usually write.
Mm-hmm.
I have an entire series of novellas and novels called Always a Marine, which focus on Marines getting out of the military, usually with severe injuries. And I created a whole veterans rehab center called Mike's Place in Allen, Texas. I mean, I don't know where I got that idea from, you know, considering Allen's right around the corner from where I live. But I did that, and that was a lot of fun. And then I've done a series with the second book. And here's the timing, too, with this that was – it's Lone Star Leathernecks is the series. But the second book in that series actually came out in December, about a week after I had my surgery. And the hero in that book had spinal damage, and he had spinal pain and had all this spinal stuff he had to get over, and that was part of his healing process. Now, a lot of people are like, look, isn't that neat? You coordinated your surgery around that book, Elise. Not on purpose. Not on purpose.
But it makes for great advertising copy.
It did. And I was able to comment on it, and I didn't realize, actually, when I was writing that book, because I wrote that book almost a year ago. Actually more than a year ago, because I wrote it back in 2016 and it came out in Christmas 2017. But when I was writing that book, I used so much of my own personal experience, not only with horses, because I used to work with horses a lot and I worked with rescue horses, but I was with the pain that I had gone through with the spinal injuries that I had had. And it's really hard to explain. There's pain and then there's nerve pain. So nerve pain is very, very different and it's really hard to cope with. And that is what this hero is going through in that particular book. And it's called As You Were, Cowboy. And I didn't realize how cathartic that had been for me to go through and do that. But then the book came out, I was rereading the book, getting ready to do, I had to do some promotional materials. And so I was rereading through it and I was like, dude, I didn't realize how much of myself I put in here.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so I've got that. And then I also have, in addition to these military series that and playing in like Susan Stoker's Kindle World and now L. James's Kindle World, I have a series called Bravo Team Wolf, and these are Force Recon Marines that are also werewolves because I love paranormal. I love shifters, and so these are wolf shifters, and they the government had discovered that there were wolf shifters in the country. And because of satellites and stuff, and even the wolf packs knew that this was eventually going to happen. So a deal was struck. There would be wolves would volunteer from the various packs, and they would serve in the military for a certain amount of time to give the U.S. military an edge, as it were. And they are, you know, they are Force Recon Marines. They go into, you know, places where no one wants to go. And they usually come out successful because they have not only their training, which they do have some, they have training because they have to train to work together as a unit from all these disparate packs, but they're also wolves. So that was a lot of fun to write. And the first book came out last year. It was called When Danger Bites. And book two comes out in May, and it's Bitten Under Fire.
Oh, that sounds like awesome.
I had loads of fun. If you can't tell, I have a lot of fun writing these. I really love a good military hero. You have so many places you can go with it. They can be taciturn. They can be, you know, the fun-loving guy, the jokester. Almost all of them have discipline of some kind. And even if you end up with a guy who has discipline issues, they can be a lot of fun too.
Yes. I love it. I love it. So what's the project that's sitting on the horizon that you haven't dug your teeth into yet that you're excited about besides the Runaway Brides from Disney?
I have I'm finally getting to go back to my Wolves of Willow Bend series, so that's actually mm-hmm. sitting there on tap. I've got the next book in that. It's I'd written 12 books, and there are 5 novellas in that series, and a lot of people thought that the last book, Ghost Wolf, they're like, that's such a great capper to this whole series. I'm like, dude, story's not over. I mean, that particular arc is done, but I have more story to tell, and my readers were really, you know, they were all, oh, I'm so sad it's over. And when I told them it's not, they were super happy. And then I've made them wait a year.
Nice.
It's been a little busy, but that's actually, it's coming very soon on my to be written. Then I'm dying to get my hands on it to be able to work on that. And I also have a project that I'm shopping right now that I can't really talk about too terribly much, but it actually takes me to a genre I've never gotten to write before, and it's a project I get to work on with my kids. So you know, that's a lot of fun for me.
And that sounds really amazing.
I'm super excited about that. And then I have one other super secret project that is also being shopped that it will be a dream come true for me if it gets picked up.
Cool.
So, fingers and toes crossed there. So I've got a lot of irons in the fire, as it were.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's part of a writing career today, is you have to be fast and you have to have a lot of projects going. So when one of these super secret projects sells, I do hope you'll come back to the show and tell us about it. hopefully it's before your trip to Disney. But, of course, clearly we have to have you back to hear about your trip to Disney as well. You can review Star Wars Land for us. We'll just change the radio show to, Disney Reviews. It'll be great.
Hey, you know, you can totally find the military link with The Last Jedi, because one of the biggest, spoiler alert if you haven't seen the movie, one of the biggest complaints I've heard about Last Jedi is that Vice Admiral Holdo is a character in it who is left in charge through various circumstances. And Poe, who is a little favorite from the first movie, she doesn't tell him what her plans are. She just gives him orders. And, you know, so then he goes off on his own little escapade and almost causes a mutiny, actually does cause a mutiny, does all these things. And people are like, well, if she had only told Poe. And I'm like, in the military chain of command, the day a vice admiral has to explain herself to a captain, I'm sorry,
aww,
I'm out.
Amen.
So
yes,
look, there's a military link for my Star Wars love, too, because you've got chain of command.
yes, you do. And the Empire was pretty tense about it. Oh, my gosh.
Yes,
it's been so much fun talking with you, Heather. And I clearly have to have you back. And but I do thank you for taking a break in your busy writing schedule to spend a few minutes with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was way funner than I was all worried that I was going to sound silly, but you know what? Silly is cool too.
Oh, silly totally. And gosh, I really do appreciate it. And next week, it's actually the week after next, on January 25th, I will be interviewing Suzanne Brockman, and I invite all of you back to hear our conversation. And with that, I will bid you farewell. This is a copyrighted podcast owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Happy reading.